It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why, despite your admittedly very elaborate and detailed story, I don't remember who you are or know why you showed up at my house to do a podcast.
But you pressed the button anyway.
Yeah. I figure I see what happens.
Okay.
Dude, it's been 3 weeks. Like,
well, if I knew you were just going to do it without the elaborate story...
Have your eyes always been that color?
If I knew you were going to do it without the elaborate story, I wouldn't have told the elaborate story. I don't just like to talk to hear myself talk, you know?
There's actually a major contingent of our fans that would disagree with that.
I'm sure that's true.
There's a specific faction of William likes to hear himself talk, Magical Talking Hat fans. There's about 250 of them. They have meetings.
And just 250?
Yeah. Well, card-carrying members. I think their forums are much busier than that.
I see.
But they haven't... I'll put it this way. When they do the annual William's Talking to Hear Himself Talk, Magical Talking Hat fans cruise each year, they can't get a whole ship themselves yet.
Yeah.
They're not
yeah.
there. Yeah. Even a smaller one.
Okay.
So... It's a fun time. You should go.
Well,
I think you would be a very...
Here's the thing. I've never been invited, so what's that tell you?
Ah.
It's obvious, actually, why I wouldn't be invited to that. So.
They just play the tapes.
No. They take a break. That's what they do.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world... that has fictitious listeners that join a fictitious faction to then start a fictitious cruise. I'm fairly confident I can state that.
Yeah.
I feel like that's...
pretty solid, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 304.
304. Goodness gracious.
Yep.
And...
the first one of 2017.
Yes, and we haven't... officially recorded in 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Goodness. How does this show work again?
I don't remember.
Oh, wait. Let me tell me.
Okay.
We have a hat.
Mm-hmm.
It's magical.
Mm-hmm.
In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com.
That sounds familiar.
People, like those fictitious people we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. also real people, whichever you are. It's fine.
Yeah.
Write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's a ever-ready servants... draw those cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show.
Mm-hmm. That pretty much sums it up.
So that'll be fun.
Yep.
So how were your holidays?
Good. Lots of stuff happened.
Oh?
Yeah, tons and tons of stuff.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm probably not going to talk about them. Because you probably have tons and tons of stuff.
I don't, actually.
What do you mean you don't? 3 weeks and you don't have a lot to talk about?
Well, I didn't say I didn't have a lot to talk about. I said not a lot of stuff happened.
Okay.
Different things. Mostly I saw a shit ton of movies, of which maybe like three of them I want to talk about.
Well, I mean, we played a Dishonored 2.
Oh, yeah.
We are just almost finished with the... PS4 release of the 2013 PS3 Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider. I've seen you've been playing that.
Definitive Edition or whatever they call it. Been playing that, which I could talk a lot about just that.
Is good?
Well, there's just it is, but there's it's a complete departure from the original material so many ways, in interesting ways, and yet some of it is the same in some of the worst ways. Let's see, we watched we finished The Good Wife, which was that was a pretty good show.
Good timing, because you're about a month away from Christine Baranski's spinoff.
Yeah, the Good Fight, they're going to call that one. What else? We saw the extended version of Batman v Superman.
Ooh.
Which I could talk about that. But a lot of...
Did it improve the film?
It... See, these are complex questions. I would say it was technically a better film.
Okay, but was it a more enjoyable film to you?
No.
Right.
Because I think their portrayal of certain characters is still terrible. But
so it's still, this didn't alleviate some of the fundamental issues.
No, but a lot, it improved the character development. I mean, the characters...
Well, that should make you enjoy it some more. I didn't say you had to call it a good movie now. Just did you like it better than the other version?
Did I like it better? Yeah, I liked it better. Okay. But to me, it's like saying, okay, here's the sandwich you ordered with just the bread and nothing inside, and here's the sandwich you ordered. Which do you like better? I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous comparison.
So which of these is the sandwich you ordered?
The sandwich, well, I didn't really order it, but the complete thing is the extended version. It's like the theatrical release was, they shouldn't even have released it like that.
Okay.
Because there are problems with the film. The extended release has its problems that are its problems with just, they do a terrible job with Superman and Batman anyway. But to add on to that, an edit that where the story doesn't even make any sense, and what the characters are doing doesn't make any sense until you see the extended version. You go, oh, okay, I get.
So that does. So the story makes sense now.
More sense, yeah.
All right.
It's the extended version to me is, I would say technically, like the theatrical release. I had a lot of problems with it, but I had problems with it technically. Like it was technically not well made. Now there are far few technical objections. I mean, technically, I can say, okay, that's a good film technically. The problems I have with it are mostly matters of taste and things like that. But why put out this film that's just not going to work without that extra
stuff? How long is the extended version?
Well, see, I think it is pretty long.
I think it's like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Because the original is pretty long.
Yeah, Ghostbusters, we talked about this with Ghostbusters, how I thought that the extended version was so much better than theatrical version, but it only increased the length of the film by like 20 minutes.
Was not that long either version.
So I don't know why they just didn't have it in there. But
Superman v whatever, those guys already seemed ridiculously long to me edited version.
I guess, but when a film is edited poorly, it feels longer in the theater than a film that's put together well.
Agreed. We have to keep remembering, I do this a lot with TV, and specifically with TV going on longer than it should. Ultimately, in almost all cases, and certainly in this case, nobody's trying to make a good film. They're trying to make a film that's going to earn a lot of money.
I guess.
And if you make it 3 hours, a lot fewer people are going to go to it.
Well, okay, but anyway, that was more than I want to talk about that. This is what I'll say about Tomb Raider, though. They, as far as I can tell, they threw everything away, but they kept three things from the original series. One, Lara Croft in her default clothing. You can give her other clothes to wear, I guess. In the edition we've got, you've already got like six things you can choose from. I imagine in the original, you had to play the game for a while or get DLCs, but her default clothing is fairly, what I'm trying to say is the model for the game is sexualized. Not quite as much probably as the original, but that is something they did with the new character reboot also. She's a fairly sexualized character.
Absolutely no way that wouldn't have happened. Understandable entirely. I'm guessing most people technically prefer it that way.
They kept that. They kept the tomb raiding aspect.
Hey, raiding some tombs. I like that.
And they kept And maybe
is
other.
She's still British?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's another thing they kept. But the third thing, and maybe this isn't something that other people observed in the original, but I certainly did, and it was one of the reasons why, even though my wife really liked Tomb Raider, liked the whole concept of it, liked Lara Croft, didn't even mind how she was dressed or any of that stuff, she loved that, but she could never get through a whole game, was the torture porn aspect of it.
Oh, the death animations? I heard the death bits in Lara Croft are impressive.
Yeah, and they're terrible.
Yeah. Well, but for some people, I actually not long ago read an article specifically by a woman talking about how she used to play it as a kid, and her whole thing was to just get her into more disturbing death scenes. That was just her jam.
Okay, well, this is why my wife could never finish a game.
And they still have that in this one.
Well, and it's, of course, it's worse because
yeah,
it's more graphic.
More technical.
And you've got Uncharted to compare it to, because in terms of game mechanics and gameplay and game setting, I mean, this is Uncharted with Lara Croft instead. Yeah. Everything about it is Uncharted with Lara Croft instead. But we've played Uncharted. We like Uncharted. They never show him dying like that.
Yeah.
Ever. It just doesn't happen. But they have special animations of her dying, and, I mean, it's never... Very rarely does she just fall off of something and you don't really see much of anything.
Yeah.
They've got, for whatever that situation is, they've got a special animation so you can see her die, and, you know, she gets impaled on something and she's struggling for a little while right before, you know, the light of life leaves her eyes. I mean, horrible, horrible stuff. So those three things they kept. Everything else they threw out.
Oh my goodness.
And, except that she's British. She starts out as an academic. She's an archaeologist, like an honest-to-goodness archaeologist. Like, she's going to where she's going because it's, you know, it's like an archaeological expedition. She doesn't expect there to be anything crazy happen. She doesn't want for there to be anything crazy happen. And it's somewhat refreshing to see her somewhat realistic and authentic emotional responses to things happening. Which you don't usually get in a video game. You know, the hero, they run into some kind of peril, and they just... deal with it. But she'll,
or you get a one moment of, wow, oh no, or whatever.
And then moves on. But no, she'll get scared, she'll get sad, she'll cry. I mean, it's really kind of cool. Now, my wife felt like sometimes in those moments they kind of overdid it in a way that they wouldn't have done if it were a male character. And also did it in a way that was sort of somewhat juvenile, like she was 13 instead of 23. And I got that was probably it. But I also really appreciated that it was just, you just don't see that. Even in movies a lot of times, action movies, people don't respond to things the way you'd expect human beings would really respond to things.
Yeah.
So she's got this nice arc of someone who didn't want this stuff to happen, showing her dealing with it and changing over the course of the game. She's this wonderfully drawn, well-rounded character, and... What's great about it is you feel like it's basically Uncharted, but with a different character. But the character isn't different so much because it's a woman, but because it's an archaeologist.
Oh, yeah, no, the nature of the character
because,
is very different.
Yeah, because, you know, Drake's not an archaeologist.
No.
I mean, he's got a lot of archaeological knowledge or whatever, but
he's
that's
a thief.
He's a thief. And a vandal, so to speak.
And certain versions of Lara Croft are like that, too.
Well,
most noticeably in the movies,
yeah,
I think.
Well, and in the original, she was that way. And in fact, if instead of having Nathan Drake in the original Uncharted series, they'd had everything the same except made it Lara Croft, it would have been a perfect Tomb Raider game, very well tied into her original personality and everything. But again, that's what I like about this game is that, as I said, you're playing it, and you think to yourself, wow, this is just like Uncharted, except... It's very different because of this different character. But again, not because the character is a woman, because the character is an archaeologist.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's a great accomplishment. You know, I think that's, and so...
I'm not sure if I'll ever play it. I've heard many people say many things, and it's, there's a lot that I think I would like and a lot I think I would not like. But the biggest one is, I couldn't play the originals, and I never even made it through the first Uncharted. The gameplay just didn't do it for me.
I don't know
what it is. But, so we'll have to see. Because the people who love the new Tomb Raider really love the new Tomb Raider.
Well, now, my wife at first, I mean, we almost didn't get through it. We almost my wife almost quit because she never did like the whole torture porn aspect. She could see that was going to be part of it.
Not appeal to me.
I'm
putting that in the con list.
Well, definitely. But here's the thing about it that is different from the originals. In the original games, they had puzzles in it where she almost had to die like 3 or 4 times just for you to figure out how the puzzle worked and solve it. This game's not like that. This game is a lot like Uncharted where, you know, if you can master the controls well, because for some people in these types of games, when they die, it's not really because of something in the game. It's because they pressed the wrong button or fumbled the controls or whatever. But this, in Uncharted games, and this game's the same, if you can master the controls early enough, there's no reason for in the whole game for you to die, especially if it's uneasy. And that's really the only place the torture porn comes into it. I mean, she gets beat up and falls and stuff a lot like Nathan Drake does, but it's like Nathan Drake does. You know what I'm saying? It's not, I don't want to say it's not gratuitous, but it's in proportion to what happens to
not horrific.
Yeah, to what happens to the male character in the other game.
Yeah.
So if you can avoid dying, and which is not very hard to do, then you're not going to see that kind of stuff. Also, in this game, if you don't like how she's dressed, there are other options where she can be dressed in a less sexualized way. So those things could be controlled for a little bit. But one thing that bothered my wife was she liked Lara Croft's sort of original, more like Nathan Drake, kind of a mouthy, kind of with a little swagger, you know, confident. She liked that Lara Croft personality.
Okay.
Better than she liked this bookish, academic who was unsure of herself and unconfident at the beginning of the game. But I think as she played the game, she realized how that really lent itself to a more interesting and more well-rounded character.
Well, this was definitely supposed to be a new origin story, basically.
Yeah. Well, now they tried to reboot the whole thing, I think in 2003 even, or was it 2006? I don't remember. And the game...
and that bomb.
Was a big failure. Yeah. We didn't even try it. But we decided to try this one, and I think now that we're very close to finishing it, I think my wife thinks that it's I don't know if she'd call it better than the original, because again, she really liked Laura's original sort of smart aleck kind of personality. I think she thinks it's as good, and she might find that she likes it better, because you know there's another game out for the PS4 that we'll probably play. So that was all kind of interesting. But the biggest news over the last 3 weeks in our household was that Carrie Fisher passed away.
Yeah.
And her mom, Debbie Reynolds. And it's like, man, what a rough week that was.
My grandma died that week. And it was a weird night. I mean, in the grand scheme, I think she was happy. I'm really glad she's dead. We're all really glad she's dead.
She's
glad she's dead. Yeah, she died that same week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that was the thing. I was sitting there around going, maybe this will save some celebrity who was going to die instead. Next freaking day, Debbie Reynolds. I was like, are you kidding me?
Damn
it, 2016.
I didn't know. My condolences.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it was a wistful night because it was my last grandparent and all that stuff. But, I mean, she was a mess and she was terrible and she was running out of money and she hadn't enjoyed life for a really long time.
Was she ill or... Just
old people. I mean, she was 101. She was heading towards 102. So she had also, I believe it was heart failure was the last thing. But at the end, she was pretty pleased because she had sort of, when hospice care kicked in, she had sort of connected with the nursing home's chaplain. And so had been getting a lot of stuff about heaven and how cool it was going to be and how she was going to see her family again and all. And she was really into that stuff. So we think that in a lot of it, because a lot of it seemed that she was just sort of scared of dying.
Oh.
And so I think
was this
that
your,
really helped.
On which side?
This is my mother's mother.
Your mom?
And that's the last grandparent.
How's your mom doing?
Pretty good. I mean, she's got to clean up some stuff. But yeah, no. It's that thing they talk about where sometimes you mourn someone before they're actually dead.
Sure.
We pretty much did that. So
it can creep up on you, though. I mean, sometimes people can think, you know, I'm totally prepared for this, and then they find out.
I was surprised. Like I said, it was basically that night. I was like, I'm still sad. Like, no, I wasn't crying, but like, I canceled the plans I did and stuff, and just sort of was like, I don't know. But yeah, it was a pretty short lived, just sort of processing the information
sure.
kind of thing. Because we all been waiting for this forever, so
Well, still, my condolences. I didn't know.
And then Debbie Reynolds died. Debbie Reynolds died while hanging out with her son, working on the memorial plans for her daughter. Yeah, my God. And I did love it. It was somebody on Twitter was like, for those who really are fans and know Postcards from the Edge and stuff, they can really appreciate the thunder stealing. And I had been thinking before, I'm like, man, she got her just the one last time. Although supposedly in these later years, they were super close. That's they actually lived next door to each other.
Yeah, that's rare.
But that was a huge bummer. I was a little surprised at how bothered I was that Carrie Fisher died. Like, that really got me.
Bothered
and it got
too.
A bunch of us.
Yeah,
really
a lot of people I know were, they said the same thing. They thought, wow, I was really affected by this, and I did not.
Like, maybe more than I was for, like, Bowie and Prince and stuff, which I would not have expected.
Well,
and very little of it has to do with Star Wars. The things I love about Carrie Fisher, very little of it has to do with Star Wars.
Well, I think a lot of the people who were impacted or who felt affected by it that I know, I think Star Wars did have quite a bit to do with it because a character that she created was such a big part of their growing up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as everybody who listens to this knows, I'm a completely unapologetic feminist, and I know that part of that, there's a lot of things in my, I mean, I've, you know, when I was in elementary school, I was, I didn't know what a feminist was, but I knew that, you know, girls sometimes got treated different than boys, and I didn't think it was fair, and I spoke up about it. So, you know, that's something that in me goes back a long, long ways. And Carrie Fisher in Star Wars, that I saw in 1978, because they sort of had a re-release the year after, we didn't see it the summer it came out, was just amazing, you know, just like Linda Carter was as Wonder Woman. It's like these women made a huge impression on me growing up in political ways. And not that I didn't understand at the time that way, but I did as I grew up, and I really appreciated that. And of course, I appreciate both of these women for a lot of other things that they do, you know, outside of these roles, and Carrie Fisher included there. And I just, it was just very sad that, I don't know, you know, it was pretty devastating, really, that she was gone. And also, right after she's kind of coming back in a way, I mean, coming back to the Star Wars movies, and I just heard some news today, and there's a lot of rumors, so I don't know what any of it means, but there's some suggestion that there were plans for, you know, she got all of her scenes for
Episode 8 taken care of,
but there's talk about how she was supposed to have quite a big impact in Episode 9.
Yeah.
It almost seems like that they had it set up where, okay, Harrison's going to really dominate Episode 7, and then we're, you know, we didn't even give Mark any lines in that movie, so let's let him have his say in Episode 8, and we'll let Carrie have her time in the spotlight in Episode 9, and now that's all gone.
And now they're having to choose between rewrite or CGI.
Yeah, and it's not only is that terribly disappointing for Carrie, who's a great actor.
Oh, yeah,
she's
very
good. And she took a character that even in under George Lucas's best efforts to to sexualize and marginalize, really elevated that character to this great iconic place. And here, these last three movies give Carrie a chance to sort of bring that great character to a whole other generation, and add some representation to older women, you know. And it feels like what the news is saying is that, well, they were going to make her wait until the third movie to really make that impact, and now she's not going to be able to do it, and that's unfortunate for Carrie, and unfortunate for the character, and unfortunate for anyone who is inspired by that kind of character. And I don't know, it's just really, really sad. And as for Debbie Reynolds, I mean, as I've often said, when I was growing up, all of the stars I knew were older stars, and she was one of them, you know, Singing in the Rain and all that stuff, and I don't know, it's just really sad.
Going through her obituary, the crap she had to deal with was amazing to
Debbie
me.
Reynolds?
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I had not, no, I mean, I knew that she and Eddie Fisher eventually divorce, but I didn't realize that he left her for Liz Taylor, and that specifically Liz Taylor was the recent widow of his best friend.
Oh, yeah, it's just crazy stuff.
And then years later, they're in a movie together. I forget what it was, but in '90s or something, they were in a movie together. I'm like, that must have been
odd. Which I think Carrie Fisher had something to do with, worked on, like, as a producer or something.
It was in the '80s and '90s. She was a script doctor for half the movies of Hollywood, including some really bad ones. Like when you really see the list, you're like, "Wow, she worked on that! Wow, wait, what?" No.
Well, I think she helped George with the prequels a little bit.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Script doctoring there.
That's the thing. Most of my love for Carrie Fisher is her as a writer.
Oh yeah, she was a very gifted writer. She was great in that episode with 30 Rock. She was so good.
It was so, and just so well, so on pitch.
Like, yeah.
Like, it was incredibly enlightening and self-deprecating and, like...
And maybe like, a little autobiographical.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like she was playing Carrie Fisher, and she was playing a really good Carrie Fisher, but then she was also playing a really bad Carrie Fisher with the self-awareness that, like, yeah, this is how...
It was good.
You know, wait, is really this good. Wine? You've been drinking this all day? Yeah.
Never follow a hippie to... What was that line? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember that
line. Never follow a hippie to a second location or something. I don't remember what it was. No, but yeah, she was great in that. But yeah, it's just really sad. Really sad. But anyway, I didn't mean to take up so much time.
How was actual Christmas?
Oh, well, we went to, you know, my youngest brother got remarried recently, and we went to his house, and his, I guess, stepdaughters now were all there, and that was fun. So it was the usual thing, but that's the first time we've had Christmas at their house, because that's the first time they've had their house.
Yeah.
That was kind of nice.
We were pretty chill Christmas, I think, because there were a lot less presents, because the primary present for most of the family is this trip to Disney World that we'll be doing.
Oh, yeah, right.
Coming up. So I think that helped, but I don't know, the kids are just of an age now, like there were no meltdowns or anything. They were a little cranky. The day we were leaving, they were a little cranky, which they always kind of are the day we're leaving. And also, they had stayed up really late the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So they were a little... They were getting on my nerves at that point. But there were no, like, tantrums, no crying throughout the entire trip. And that's unusual for kids. No, they did pretty good. We had a pretty good time.
Good.
I still slept terrible. I've been sleeping terrible a lot.
Yeah, you said that. What was your New Year's like, though?
New Year's... well, in honor of Carrie Fisher, we watched the Star Wars Holiday Special.
No way.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Although it's interesting, because we watched it off of YouTube, because it exists on YouTube.
Yeah.
And in fact, somebody tried to do an HD remaster of it, and that's what we watched. But, I guess this is the thing about YouTube. Everything is on there unless someone cares about the copyright. What this means is, the Star Wars Holiday Special is on there. But you know what's not on there? First of all, the commercials. Somebody actually cut those out. Mm-hmm. Although that may have been, they thought they were being nice, but no. The cartoon. It specifically says cartoon not in here because of copyright reasons.
No kidding.
Yep. And they even, because they cut back to the live action thing at one point and then come back. So later we found the cartoon separately out there. And so, because there were several people in the room who had not ever seen
it. I didn't know this. But I read somewhere that the cartoon was Boba Fett's original.
That is the introduction of Boba Fett. Yes.
Because I'd forgotten that, or I got mixed up in the order of things.
The holiday special happened before Empire.
Yeah, that's right. It did. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I never really thought about that before, but someone was saying, "Oh, Boba Fett." The first time he showed up,
somehow,
holiday special.
Like the most. Let's all be totally honest here. The most famous part of the Star Wars Holiday Special is Itchy and the Diane Carroll virtual porn thing.
What? Well, I don't really remember very much about it.
This is the thing.
We rushed home to watch it, I remember, but I don't remember
much
about it.
It's the most famous part, or it's the most well-known part, and I always forget, in my head, it's one of those, well, if you take it a certain way thing. No, it's really not. It's serious, like, porn...
I don't even know what you're talking about.
He Art Carney gives him a special thing for the Mind Evaporator, which is the little VR thing that he gets into. And Diane Carroll, bless her heart, dressed in a really funky disco outfit, is there, and she's like, "Oh, I can feel how excited you are. I am here. I am your creation, so I know how you feel about me. I'm so happy to see you. Let's enjoy." And she's human, too, and so that's weird. And she's like, "Oh, we're excited, aren't we?" She says, like, yeah. And it's real trippy, you know, "Oh, we'll enjoy each other," and it's messed up. I mean, so much of the rest of it is just like, yeah, this is 70s variety show stuff. I mean, this is pretty down on the quality. This is low-end 70s variety show on TV. But it's still, like, there were a lot of shows this crazy. But then there's that shit. There's, like, what is going on there? Not okay. And I still absolutely adore Bea Arthur's scene and her musical number. I love that. It's also ridiculous, but I just love it. I just love seeing... I feel like... I love Bea Arthur. And I was introduced to Bea Arthur, same place I was introduced to Rue McClanahan and Estelle Getty, on Golden Girls.
Yeah.
So it is such a joy for me to see anything pre that. I'm seriously thinking about it because I can get it on Amazon. I've never seen Maude.
I think you'd really like it. I think Maude. You would like it.
I'm fascinated by it. I've read up on it a lot and stuff like that. Yeah. So I mean, I just like seeing like pre Golden Girls, Bea Arthur, and I mean she's a great singer. She only sang once or twice on Golden Girls, but she's a great singer. Yeah, that thing does not hold.
Well, I don't think it held up then really very good. I mean, as kids, we didn't really like it, as I recall.
Rest in peace and all that. Carrie Fisher is drunk as fuck in it, and you can tell.
Oh, okay, well.
Which, to be fair, I'm pretty sure everybody else was on something, too. From what I have learned now, apparently Harrison Ford has never been caught on film not high on pot. Apparently, he's just been a pothead since day one.
Oh,
but, I didn't know that. So I'm sure, and of course, Harrison Ford, you can also tell, is in the whole special is like, I've made a huge mistake with my life here. But she is just very clearly intoxicated, and that's kind of weird. Also, we had to explain to people that this was still pre-accident Mark Hamill.
Because it can looks be a hard. Lot different.
Yeah, he looks like the younger version of stuff. But that's the thing, if you're not looking for it, you don't notice. It was some good reconstructive surgery. But if you ever, like, side by side, you can totally.
Is that right?
Yeah. In between Empire and Jedi, he was in a, I want to say motorcycle, maybe car. Huge reconstructive surgery on his face, and really, kind of looks like a different person.
Huh.
So when you look at them together, yeah. And then we watched Logan's Run, which was just weird. I've seen Logan's Run like 3 or 4 times.
I've only seen it once.
I had forgotten about Farrah Fawcett being in it, though. That was weird.
Yeah.
And I always forget that the crazy old guy at the end is Peter Ustinov, because I'm like, really? Wow.
Peter Ustinov, there was a good actor.
Right, which
did some crazy
speaks
stuff.
To this, because, it's like, I would not have guessed it was him. So, yeah, and I drank all the vodka.
Well, that sounds dangerous.
Oh, yeah. And no, but I mean, I was fine, because I still do it with the Powerade Zero, so I keep being hydrated at the same time.
Oh,
but yeah, I was a mess, and it took me, like, the remaining 2 days of that long weekend just to sort of get on an even keel again. So I only do that once a year, because it takes that long for me to forget that it was a mess. It was fun, though. For snacks, I went out that day, and I went to every non-traditional grocery store in town.
Mm-hmm.
So we had, like, weird, like, Chinese cookies and weird chocolate-covered marshmallows on a stick with faces that came from the Mexican grocery and all sorts of weird food. So that was pretty fun. Watched just a shit ton of movies. Most of them terrible and not worth mentioning. I do have a couple. Last night, we watched Deadpool, which we had not seen. And it's pretty fun. It's not great. It's fun for its difference. It's a refreshing change from the superhero movies, because it is very self-aware, it is very self-deprecating, and lots of fourth wall breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of silly in a way. But it's still a superhero movie in a lot of ways, and that was, and like, the story is still pretty crap. like most superhero movies. But it was, like, you can totally sort of skip it forever. But, oh, it's fun. I mean, for you, it might be a little vulgar, I don't know. But it was fun, but it's, like, very forgettable. I'm, like, already losing line and stuff. But it was just a refreshing change of pace, because it really is starting to feel like all the superhero movies kind of feel the same.
Yeah.
And this one not only felt different, but made fun of the others and itself.
You know, we haven't talked about Rogue One. We've both seen that since.
Shit, that was the third one. I knew there were three, and it was one I haven't spoken of, and Deadpool, and I forgot, Rogue One. How'd you feel about Rogue One?
It felt like a toy commercial. But,
so as good as the others.
See, the thing is, Force Awakens didn't feel like a toy commercial to me. This felt like a toy commercial. And not to say it was unpleasant or bad. It just,
I think
okay.
We should say off the bat, for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's a Star Wars movie. Similar to other Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
It was good. If you like Star Wars movies, you should totally see it.
Yeah,
you'll enjoy
it. I agree with that.
That underlies all
yes,
of this.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
Perfectly viable Star Wars
movie. But it's like, I don't think we're going to, like, buy it. Mm. You know? My wife, who usually likes anything that's got, a well-drawn female lead in it, and this female lead was fine. You know, she can become a huge fan of someone like that. She wants to get the action figure or whatever.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. You know, we just watched it. We were done watching it. We thought, oh, that was all right. And then that was it. So it was, but that's why I say it felt like a toy commercial, because you know, it was okay. And like you just said, if you like Star Wars, you should go see it.
Yeah, I'm definitely not sorry I did.
But we're not going to see it again. We're probably not going to buy it. You know, a year from now, we might even forget it was even around.
I was quite disappointed in it. But for, I think, different reasons from you. I'm not sure. I do want to say, and this to me is funny, and it does count as a pretty big spoiler for Rogue One, but also a really self-evident one, which is why this is funny. So keep that in mind. If you need to jump ahead, that's fine. But it wasn't until we were about 20 minutes from the end that I was suddenly like, you know, these characters would have played a really big role in Episode 4 if they were still alive. And I felt like an idiot that's when that finally occurred to me. I'm like, Jin would have totally been helping out with Mon Mothma and shit if she was still around.
It was pretty early in the film where someone should have been figuring out where it was going, yeah.
I was like, oh, how did I not think of that? No, but here's the big things for me. One is a weird one. I might be getting tired of Star Wars. Not that I'm disliking earlier ones, but it's sort of like the superhero thing. They're sort of similar. like there's a big battle scene at the end of this. Mm. And on paper, it's really impressive. And I really can't fault it, except that I'm like, I've done a lot of these Star Wars big battle scenes. And this is an awful lot like those.
Well, this is a story that could have been told so much better. That's another thing.
Well, but, and that's in my second point, which is the huge one for me. So, for those who didn't know, the movie's darker than most of them. However, apparently the movie was originally quite a bit darker, and Disney insisted on reshoots to make it more positive. I personally felt that I could absolutely tell what parts were reshot and what
I
were not,
like, yeah.
And it felt very schizoid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made the characters feel very, especially Jin.
Yeah, especially.
Feel very inauthentic to me.
Yep.
Agreed. Although, totally the captain, agreed. The main guy to start with, I don't know if the character was written poorly or what, but I did not like that character at all. It felt unrealistic, it felt contradictory, it felt dumb, like, I did not like that character.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're like, and she has a big speech that's very positive, and I'm like, that doesn't feel like this character.
Well,
they clearly added that shit. And some of the interesting dark shit from the trailer, like her, you know, you're a rebellion, I rebel, and Saul Guerrera's big speech about what you do and what you become, not in the movie at all.
Yeah.
And that, I was very disappointed in that, because it felt, it made the movie felt schizoid. I was like, I don't believe in any of this.
I agree. I thought, I mean, I don't know, I hadn't really heard about the reshoots doing that thing specifically, but the trailers, pretty much all the trailers, except for the most recent ones, seem to sell a very different mood for the film.
Which it supposedly was at first.
Well, and that's believable, considering, as you just pointed out, there are a lot of things in the trailers that aren't in the film.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Which happens, but
that does happen, but this is, like, a lot of things.
And it's very pointed things.
Yes, very pointed things.
That fit a certain vibe.
That's right, that struck a very specific tone in the previews, a tone that many of us were looking forward to.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to that tone.
But Disney did not think we were going to
look well,
and apparently, it's a shame, because it is a very dark chapter. Like, and that, there is something, I feel like the next time I watch A New Hope, this will inform the vibe. Because they've talked before about, like, how many people suffered to get this or whatever. And now you've seen it. And it's still pretty dark in a lot of
ways. Yeah. But but you have to commit to something like that. You can't flinch from it. You can't say, wow, this is really... This is there's no light here. It's like, well, that's okay, because that's life sometimes.
And
that's the whole point of this
film.
That's
this story.
Yeah. In fact, that's what is going to be great about this story, is that in all the other Star Wars films, there's always some little thing to keep you holding on, and that's good, and that's the strength of those films. This film's going to be different, because it would be nice in the whole Star Wars thing
absolutely.
If we had something a little different.
We didn't have all our films
the same. And so when people saw the previews and they realized, this is going to be some serious stuff. This is going to be like a good war movie.
Which is what they kept saying. They're like, it's a good
movie. And this female character is going to be, you know, really, you know, edgy and focused and
I forgot about the war movie thing. Yeah, that's the problem. This was not a war movie. This was very much a Star Wars.
Maybe have some mysterious. I mean, all this stuff seemed like it was going to be really cool, and then you watch the movie, and not only is it not that, but you get a sense that it's not that. Because they changed their minds, because the preview, not only did the preview sell you a different movie, because a lot of previews do that, but the things in the preview weren't in the movie.
No, but there were still definite scenes and parts of it that were really dark, and then alongside stuff that
really and you're right, it didn't really work together very well. That's right.
And, I mean, so whatever it is, I didn't care about the characters at all. The character I cared about most was the droid voiced by Alan Tudyk. And I only kind of cared about him, but... Yeah, I didn't care about anybody, so I was quite disappointed. But it's a Star Wars movie. It's a good, you know, watch it. That's great.
But I wish it. I do wish they.
There was a lot of potential there.
If it's what
and
you're
a
saying,
hell of a cast.
If it's yes, it was. And if it's as you say, they really just should have committed to it. I mean, maybe pushed back if Disney didn't like it. Say, hey, look, this has got to be. We're making something different here. This is how we're going to.
Well, and I think there was some of that. I mean, it got weird because said they were going to do reshoots, and then everybody was freaking out.
But everybody does reshoots, though. Reshoots happen.
Yeah, no, but this was like an important, like they made a big deal about how. And I think it was late in the game, like after it was basically done, they were like, "No."
Well, it's too bad because it could have been it could have been really, really good.
Yeah.
I mean, probably still not something that would impress a person who's not a Star Wars fan.
No, this is definitely a piece. And now, what's interesting to me, a lot of people complained about the Uncanny Valley aspects of the Peter Cushing CGI.
Oh, there's that.
I actually found that one of the more believable CGs ever. However, there is another one later that I won't spoil that looked freaky as hell.
Yeah, it was
and
awful.
Was absolutely unnecessary as well.
Yeah, it was awful. It was awful. But
I thought their Grand Moff Tarkin was pretty
But
good.
When I saw Peter Cushing, basically, on the screen, my first thought was, there's no way they're going to pull this off. And then they pretty much pulled it off.
They did. I mean, at no point did I forget that it was CG.
Just a little bit. I mean, the smallest amount I've ever seen.
But it was tight. Like,
And I was,
And people talked about it being bad, because I knew going in, it was good. I'd read a review.
Oh, I didn't know.
And I was like, oh, I'll get ready for that. And I'm like, actually?
I had no idea Grand Moff Tarkin was going to be in it. And when I saw him, like I said, my first thought was, they're going to cut away or something. Something.
Yeah. That's what you do.
I was really surprised to see him and kind of happy. I don't know how to describe it. It was like, oh, wow, that's Grand Moff Tarkin. And then my second thought was, oh, crap, that's Grand Moff Tarkin. They really better cut away really quick before it's spoiled. And then he started talking.
Yeah, and
it sounded like him. Yes.
And yeah, I don't even know how they did the sound. That was amazing.
To me, it was really good. I know a lot of people did complain about it, but I thought it was really good.
Well, it definitely marks the high end now. Like, for the longest time, we've had a spectrum of how well you can do on this. And the bottom was Polar Express until Tron...
Well,
Legacy.
And A Christmas Carol with what's his name?
I don't know.
The animated one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Well, that one was just creepy all around. But no, this was trying to actually make an actor. And then in Tron Pretty Legacy.
Good. Oh, yeah.
That's young right. Jeff
Bridges.
Bridges was terrifying. And he became the new Love. And I say that, not only did I already believe that, but in talking with people about this, every time I talk about decency, they're like, it's not like Jeff Bridges. And I'm like, no.
I thought it was good. I've heard some people say, oh, it was terrible. But
no,
what do you
mean? I think this is our new current top end.
It seemed pretty good to me.
For recreating somebody in CG.
It seemed pretty good to me. I was really impressed.
They do another one later. It was terrifying.
I won't talk about anything else spoiler, because that's kind of spoilery to mention him, I suppose.
Well, I don't know.
I didn't know he was going to be in it.
I know, but it's not that. I mean,
it's pretty
he's
early.
A major figure in the Empire, and this is shortly before the movie he spends a lot of time in.
It's pretty early in the film. But wow, I was like, wow, that is so good.
Yeah. And they were right. The main villain of it was a little generic, which, you know, whatever. But we're running out of time. We got a direct question. I do want to talk real quickly about another movie that I saw.
Okay.
It's a weird movie. But I think I recommend it. I'm just fascinated by it. What it did very well. It's an Argentinian horror film from, I think, 2014 called... The in the U.S. release, it's called Children of the Night. The original title is Limbo. And it is basically a story of a home... It's a hospital slash group home thing for child vampires. Which is to say... Vampires have... They refer to shameless vampires that turned children and then just, you know, like, abandoned them.
Because a child isn't going to grow up. Exactly.
They're eternally children. And so they have these homes where people sort of take care of them.
That's a very interesting
under
premise.
The guise of them having this weird disease that doesn't let them go out in the daytime. And that's how the whole thing starts, is a reporter gets invited.
This sounds like a fantastic idea.
Which has been done on occasion on small scale.
Okay.
But... and there's a cultural thing too, because it's set in Argentina. There's a big aspect that on top of all of this, they're very Catholic.
Okay.
And there are even weird plays through on that. There's a scene where we find out that a kid has been sucking his own blood, and it's entirely treated like you were at a Catholic boarding school and you were caught masturbating, like the whole thing. And that's the thing, it's not a comedy, but it has bits that are just kind of funny because the juxtaposition of these children, and sometimes they are very childlike, and there are some scenes that are very much children at play, including some scenes that are kind of gruesome, that are still that, and then other scenes where you've literally got these six-year-olds sitting around smoking cigarettes and having a wine tasting of blood that they bottled, and like comparing the flavors of the Nun from 82 versus other things, just straight done. These kids do an amazing job. And there is a lot of blood in this movie. I would say there's not a lot of gore. It's not a really scary one. There's a lot of blood. It's a vampire thing, so there's a lot of bleeding that happens. But it was just so impressive. And it is shot brilliantly. They just play with the idea that these are vampires. In some cases, 80, 100 years old. They are also children. In some cases, new children. In some cases, just children who never got to grow up. Because you didn't go through the physiological changes that would have occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And they play off of it really interestingly. and it's got weird stuff because, like, there's this one that he's the grandson of the original Count Dracula. And there's a bunch of weird crap in their mythology, too. But it was just sort of fascinating. And I watched it over two nights because it gets weird in places, because one of the kid vampires was childhood friends with one of the main characters, but then was turned into a vampire. And so now the other one's older, and there was like a romance thing, and he's still sort of trying to push for this, but to her, he's a kid. And he gets really kind of, like, graphic in his hitting on her.
Wow.
And it's just awkward for everybody. Because he's like, she's like, no. And then they just sort of sit around. And they still are, like, very close. And it's not a comedy. But it just had a lot of stuff that made me, like, chuckle and laugh. And it's just brilliantly put together and shot. So I highly recommend it. Children of the Night.
But it's a foreign film.
It's an Argentinian film. Done by Ivan Noel, who's not Argentinian, but
it's not in English.
No, it's subtitled. Yeah. It's Spanish with subtitles.
All right,
you drew a question while I was talking about that.
Coffee?
No, it's too late at night.
Wants to know.
Coffee!
When was the last time you took action without a clear plan in your head, but with belief in your heart that it could be done?
I don't remember being in any action movies, so I can't. I mean, I do that all the time.
Seems like I do too. I'm
like, yeah, we'll work it out.
Yeah.
We're actually, we've been having some issues with this right now with the planning of the Disney World trip. Because I'm a little trepidatious about the trip. Disney World, not really my thing. I mean, I've never been, but just from what I know about it, I'm like, it's not necessarily, but I'm sure it'll be fun. But there's a lot of stuff going on. We had to make reservations for things and all that. There will be four real days. We'll get in late Friday, then we'll have Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday we'll leave fairly early. And I'm sure it's going to be fun, but I just sort of don't know. And Trisha's like, oh, I'm going to plan stuff so you. And I'm like, don't worry about me, you know. Probably a lot of things I'll enjoy will be not having to do things if I can, like, relax and stuff and all of this. But then, so tonight, we're talking, and she's asking me things like, you know, time do you want to start today? I'm like, I don't know what time. And finally, she got really fed up. She's like, I'm just done. I can't. And she's like, I can't take this anymore. You do what you want. And in my mind, I haven't done anything yet. And so I'm like, what are you sick of? But now I'm slowly putting this together. Disney World, at least to a degree, or at least the way that my family does it, it seems, you have to plan, because you have to make reservations for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things, including basically any restaurant where a server comes and asks you what you want to order. You better reserve in advance.
Well, I'll tell you what one of the things I was really surprised about with Disney World was the quality of the food there.
I've heard it. And I've read some articles.
And the breadth of variety. I mean, especially if you go to Epcot. Yeah. Every single place.
Which our big family dinner is at the German place in Epcot.
Oh, well, so you're going to be really happy with that.
That was my mother-in-law's big dream.
There's an Italian place there. I mean,
you have to reserve them. Wait a minute. And that's the thing. The fun stuff, like, you have to set it out. And in my mind, if I'm going on a 4-day vacation anywhere, I'm not planning out those 4 days beforehand. Maybe I'm planning out the first one, sort of, and we try it, and then we're like, how do we like that? No, tomorrow I want to sleep in, or whatever. So it didn't occur to me that this is a thing I needed to do. And so I'm just, like, keeping my head down, because I'm like, we'll just see you when we get there. But apparently we got to work out this stuff.
Well, especially if there's other people involved, too.
Well, and this is me going, I don't have a plan, but I'm sure it'll be fun. But that's sort of not how Disney World works these days.
Yeah, sort of not.
I guess. I mean, yeah, there is other family. But that's the thing. A lot of these plans don't specifically involve them. It's just stuff for Trish and I, I think. And I mean, and we've got it worked out. And I'm sure it's going to be fun. But it's just that whole idea. I'm not a big planner in general.
I'm not really either. I mean,
To my detriment in a lot
there,
of cases.
There are things that require a lot of planning. Yes. I mean, as a person who's directed and produced certain things, films, radio plays, whatever, yeah, you've got to plan certain things. And because it doesn't matter what your heart tells you in those situations, you've got to have it planned. I was a manager when we worked together, and there was a ton of planning involved in that.
Wait, you planned that?
There was a lot of planning, yes.
Wow.
But
I would hate to have seen what that would look like off the cuff.
All right. But outside of those specific things that everyone, you know, acknowledges up front, it requires planning. I don't, I'm not a big planner. I kind of like to, like, my wife and I took a trip out to Hell, Michigan, north up to Paradise, Michigan. You know, we thought that would be a funny sort of thematic thing. And there was, of course, some planning about, because we had to reserve hotels and stuff and know where we were going to be at such and such a time. But after that kind of rough outline and we made reservations where we needed to, we didn't really have a commitment about what would happen on a given day. And we just did whatever, and it worked out fine that way.
There's the interesting component of knowing your heart that it could be done. Because there's a lot of times where I don't have a plan, and part of that is I know that whatever it is might not work then.
Yeah,
but it's true. Seldom am I like, if I had planned better, I could have been more successful.
Well, here's the thing, though. You and I are both, I mean, for our entire lives, we've been what others, I'm sure, would agree, are creative people. And when you're a person that likes to make things, you like to create things, you enjoy what other people create, but you also like to create your own things. You learn pretty quickly that to create something great or even good, sometimes planning has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, if you're making a radio play or a movie or whatever, there's got to be a ton of planning in that. But there also has to be other things that you don't plan because, well, directing a film, that's a perfect example. When I directed Inquire Within that you were in, you know, I wrote the script and there was a lot of planning involved in actually shooting the thing. But I didn't sit down and make a detailed plan about what the character would be like. I didn't really have a detailed plan of where the action would take place, partly because I knew I wasn't really going to have much of a choice in that. And then we ended up, like you said in one of our podcasts, we ended up in a place that was probably perfect for it.
Yeah.
Not the place I had in mind at first. This was a place we had to do it in, really. But thank goodness I didn't have it. I wasn't committed to having it in one place, or we never would have made it.
And you'll see that with people will get really unhappy about how something goes, and it turns out it was a certain detail that they had assumed would be the case, and it wasn't. And it wasn't necessarily worse, but it just wasn't how they had been envisioning it in their heads.
Right. Well, I mean, the final film was not what I envisioned when I wrote it or when I planned out the shots or when I did any of that stuff, but it was a lot better than what I envisioned because I opened myself up to the collaboration of you as an actor and the other actor that was involved and all the other people and circumstance, and it turned out being better than I could have made it if it went exactly the way I thought.
All thanks to Percocet.
Well, this is the creative process. You do have to plan, and sometimes you have to plan down to some minute details, but you always have to be open for things to go a different way. First of all, because if you're not, it might not get done. And you want it to get done. But second of all, it could end up being better than you imagined. So you can't hold on to plans too tightly. And when you're a creative person and you learn that, you end up sort of applying that to your whole life, where whenever a plan is required, you actually sit and you ask yourself, first and foremost, do we really need a plan here at all? And then if we do, how detailed does that plan have to be? And then when we figure that out, how committed to this plan should we be once we've got it all listed out? And a lot of people don't ask any of those questions. They immediately assume there has to be a plan. They immediately assume it's got to be incredibly detailed. And then from that point, they just go with the fact that it's got to follow every single step exactly or it's a huge disaster. And of course, a creative person doesn't think about it in those terms at all.
If you'd like to be a creative person, go to the blog, themagicalvlogginghat.com, and tell us about it. Don't plan it. Just go. Jazz has been a bit quieter these last few episodes, so somebody could step in and usurp her role, although Azertown's been trying a little bit. Beth is also trying, but she's trying from like 6 episodes back, and that's not as effective. So.
And Mark still comments whenever he listens, but he's like several episodes back.
He's losing ground, I believe, at this point. No, I'm worried about him.
I might see him this weekend. Maybe I'll ask him. What's going on?
Also, write into the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We need those things, or else our shaky premise falls apart. And this time, we'll just talk next week, so it won't be weird. So, enjoy your week. Happy New Year. And something funny.
yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.